Welcome to the Airport Lounge. I'm your host, Airport. This podcast, like the content I read on Twitter, is aimed at providing deeper insights into all things Web3, including the stories of prominent figures, builders, and community members generally operating in this space. My guest today is Liam D. Liam is an NFT trader and content creator who has recently been sharing on Twitter and YouTube his journey on how he turned 0.6 ETH into 40 ETH, not counting the Moonbird he minted and currently uses as his PFP. We discuss a range of topics, including Liam's upcoming event for which he's releasing a free mint ticket for attendees. I'd also like to thank Origins NFT for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Origins is a data analytics platform and community of NFT traders that I've been a part of since my time entering the Web3 and NFT communities. Owning an Origins NFT pass gives access to the closed Discord, which houses various data and alert tools, threads for in-depth discussions on projects, and in-depth write-ups from community analysts, including myself, for long-term calls and projects we're bullish on. Anyone who's followed me on Twitter for some length of time will have seen me post the occasional Origins chart together with some analysis. I often credit a lot of what I know and understand about markets and data-driven analytics to the Origins community, and truly, navigating the space is made a lot easier with a community of like-minded individuals. I've been a vocal supporter of Origins NFT for the longest time prior to sponsorship of the podcast, and I encourage everyone who's still looking for a community to navigate this space with to pop into the server, have a chat with me or any of the mods in the comments channel, and have a look around. And without further ado, let's hop into today's episode with Liam D.
Are you going to go to NFT NYC?
Yeah, so I'll be there. We kind of planned our trip around that a little bit. So yeah, because, nice. You know, obviously I wanted to hit up the Azuki event. I wanted to go to the Origins one and stuff. And so, you know, we'll see how that goes. But the Azuki event's unfortunately a raffle now. So we'll have to see.
I think the Moonbirds is the same. I think everyone's a bit, yeah, a bit sad about it, to be honest. But
okay,
it's hard when you got like 6,000-7,000 people that want to attend.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they obviously put a lot of like time and care into these things. So obviously it's going to be difficult to accommodate for everybody, I guess. Yeah. But are you going at all or?
No, I'm not, unfortunately. I really want to go. I also really wanted to go to VCon. But it's just a long way from Australia, man. Like, yeah, at least Hong Kong's not too much different, but at least you're a few hours earlier, I think.
It's an easier flight because you can go with like a straight shot, whereas I think for you guys, you have to do a layover, right?
Yeah, we have to go to Dubai or Abu Dhabi.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so, and our daughter's just, she's still so little, so it's just not really fair for me to leave the wife multiple times in a year. and I'm also speaking at an event in Vegas. It's it's the Birdies Gang NFT. I don't know if you're familiar with it. They're not very, I'd actually never heard of them, but yeah, I did a podcast with the founder. He's putting on an event there. So yeah, that's enough travel for me for 1 year, I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. So I think that's a really good segue actually, because we're recording now, but I'd love to hear about how you got into this, because I feel like you kind of exploded onto the scene recently, you know, with all the content you've been putting out and sort of everything you've been doing and obviously massive successes with trading. So I'm curious, like, what kind of got you into it? I'd love to hear your story, you know, like what got you into NFTs and sort of, you know, how you sort of see yourself in this space.
Yeah. So I think I've talked to you in the past about this. I come from a digital marketing and consulting background, and I was actually in a business mastermind group with a guy called Alex Becker. And most people know this guy. He's pretty prominent YouTuber, a bit of a shit poster, but I don't know him like that. I know him as actually like a really legitimate Web2 business guy. And so we're in a private Facebook mastermind group. And for people that don't know what that is, it's essentially an alpha group for Web2. So it's like you pay X amount of money. Like I pay $10,000, and what you get in return is you get to be inside a Facebook group with other people. And it's purely just there to network and learn off each other and help give each other alpha around growing your business. And that was actually one of the things, being in that group, there was two reasons why that helped me get into NFTs. One was obviously Alex was sharing all of these pictures of JPEGs he was flipping for absurd amounts of money. And that was pretty early on in 2021. And I saw, you know, these dog pictures and these monkey pictures and these crypto punk things he was selling. And I couldn't wrap my head around that. I was like, I've got my own business. I'm running, like, I just don't have the brain power to try and figure why these things are valuable. But I respected it. I was like, whatever, that's cool. But then there was enough people like him and other respected Web2 business guys that started leaving their Web2 business to focus more on Web3 and more on NFTs in particular. And that really made my ears perk up and go, okay, I think I need to spend a week just really giving this NFT thing a shot, because I don't know what it is, but a lot of people smarter than me leaving their Web2 stuff to go into this. So I think I need to like give it some attention. And then sure enough, like I think within 48 hours of me like just deep diving and reading blog posts and watching videos, I was sold. I was like, NFTs are the future. I'm done. Like, give me a monkey picture. And yeah, I think it really clicked for me because of the whole using an NFT as a pass for an alpha community was such a big aha moment for me, because I just paid $10,000 to be in this Facebook group with other people as a networking group. And that was it's a hugely common business model, these paid networking groups. I don't know what the figures are, but the amount of money that goes into these groups around the world, it'd be hundreds of millions of dollars, and people are willing to pay for it. But at the end of the year, everyone shakes hands, parts their, and goes their separate ways. And the $10,000 that you've paid to the founder or to be in the group is essentially just gone, right? But everyone's still willing to pay it. And then I figured out that people were running these alpha groups where you could buy these alpha passes, enjoy the group, and then when you've had enough, you could then on-sell it most of the time for a profit. I was like, what the heck? This is going to absolutely revolutionize this entire industry. Like, why would anyone ever join a networking group or join a kind of business mastermind group if it wasn't gated by an NFT? Because it's just such a negative EV player. Yeah, it was a huge aha moment for me. And I thought it would have happened already. That was like nearly a year ago. And I thought, yeah, this is going to take that world by storm. And yeah, we're nearly a year on from that point, and it's still not happening. And so I guess it just proves how early we are, because when it does happen, I think it'll just be absolute chaos how quickly it just takes over that industry.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I had a similar experience because, you know, before I got into NFTs, I was at a dinner that was hosted at a private members club, and it was the same kind of deal, right? It's like, you know, you pay a recurring membership fee to basically have access to this club, but you still have to pay for food and drink, and it's still like expensive, and like a night out is certainly not cheap if you're a member or anything. So, you know, it kind of changed my perception a little bit of, you know, how all of this stuff works. And it's exactly like you said, because I kind of came in and I was like, I don't really get why people are paying so much for art. Like, it seems kind of niche. Like, maybe it's just like rich people that want to buy, you know, pictures that they're really, you know, interested in stuff. But I think it's the same thing for me that kind of clicked when I realized, okay, like it's what you can get access to if you have the token that you can verify as being yours, you know. And that to me was like a really interesting kind of aha moment, where there is this kind of value proposition and the idea of including royalties as well, so that, you know, there's like this incentive for people to continue like developing, you know, utility and making use cases for people to want to buy. And so, you know, if people have gotten everything they want out of it, they can just sort of, you know, sell it on and sort of, you know, need to move on and stuff. And that's great. And I think it is a very interesting technology that I think will revolutionize a lot of things if it gets adoption. I mean, I think the only thing that really stops that from happening right now, anyways, is just the infrastructure is just so difficult to you know, get new people on board. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And that's a big reason why doing what I'm doing now, which is, you know, starting my YouTube channel and trying to educate people in the space and really just try and be that beginner friendly guide. Because I know when I started, that was, you know, a huge issue because I didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, I consider myself relatively tech savvy. I'm not like a hardcore dev by any means, but yeah. And I found it pretty difficult. And so I was like, yeah, well, the common person, like my mum or my dad or someone's going to find this impossible. So, if I can try and be a guiding light and try and be a friendly beginner source, you know, on YouTube that can help people with this, I thought, yeah, that could be a great thing for the space.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's always good to have that kind of resource. I think there are people that, you know, will come in and, you know, do sort of hear about people flipping a JPEG for like, you know, several hundreds of thousands of dollars or something and get intrigued by, you know, everything that's going on. And you know, this is one of the things that upsets me greatly, is that, you know, people come in and the new user experience is just absolutely dog shit, right? I mean, it's like, you know, you come in and it's like there's scams everywhere. You can't really tell like what a good project is and what a bad project is. And, you know, it's just a terrible experience. And for me, it was actually, you know, totally sort of just like moving blind until, you know, I got into, you know, the group that I'm still with, Origins, and sort of, you know, had a community of people that like understood the space, like had experience and stuff. And I think just like having access to that just completely changes the game, you know. And I think it's a shame that that's, in a sense, it's a shame that it's all gated at the moment. And I think, you know, the quality of content and the scope of the content that's out there is not fantastic. So I'm always a big fan of, you know, people creating content and stuff that helps people, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And to be honest, I, even though I'm not a big ear anymore, I still love consuming content. And I'm, you know, content that you're putting out, content that other people are putting out. It's just, I think we need more content for sure. Because at the moment we've got a lot of shit posting, a lot of just hate on Twitter, you know, and FUD. And then you've got the Discord, which is like just mania, essentially. Yeah, so I think there's a huge need for high quality content and more discussion, and I can't wait to see how that space grows over the next 12 months.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And that's kind of why I started the podcast too, is because, you know, I think a lot of content that's out there, it kind of focuses on just like bringing on people who, you know, start their own project or sort of like are working on a project. And it ends up just being like this AMA kind of shill thing where people just kind of talk about the roadmap and what they're trying to do. And it's like, you know, people have stories and people have interesting, you know, like perspectives on things. And I think that's actually where a lot of the insights can be sort of gleaned. If you hear people like talking about things that they're passionate about or talking about, you know, their thoughts on the space and all this type of things. Like, you know, I think that adds a lot of value in a sense. And it's the same as what you're saying. Like I really enjoy, you know, consuming content myself. And I think just sort of being in this space and sort of like thinking about all this stuff from time to time, like, you know, throughout your day, it's just nice to have access to high quality content that, you know, you can listen to and enjoy, like as you get about your business, you know?
There's so much to this space that we still haven't discovered yet. I think, not to shill my own project, but that my NFT for the project is a ticket. And we all know that NFT tickets for events are going to have crazy amounts of utility ongoing with regards to what people come up with. And like people ask me, well, what's the utility of this ticket after your event's over? And I don't know, but I'm so fascinated to see what I come up with and what the entire world of 7 billion people start coming up with, because I just feel like there's going to be things that, yeah, we have no idea about that are going to become normal. And yeah, the idea of listening to other smart people talk about this stuff and talk about how we can expand our thinking around the traditional roadmaps of NFT projects and the use cases of NFTs, like that's really exciting to me. And that's what I want to hear more of. And I want smart people to get together and discuss these things and push the boundaries of what's possible, because yeah, that's what's really going to push our space forward.
No, I totally agree. I think that's it's a noble goal for sure, and I like that you're doing it as a free mint as well. I think, you know, it's one of those things that we're in this weird kind of like free mint meta, and I think it's an interesting one where
it's almost like a bad, like when I launched the project, like or announced the project, that we weren't in the meta yet, so I was like, oh, this is good. I stand out from the crowd a little bit. And now I'm just like, oh no, I'm one of them. I'm like one of everyone thinks that my project's just this DGen goblin mint or something.
So why don't you, I mean, I'd love to talk about this. I mean, why don't you describe what it is you're trying to do with your project? And I think it would be interesting to also hear how you got there, but I can ask you about that after. So, I mean, you know, what are you trying to do with this? And it's interesting to hear that it's a ticket.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I guess it does help to know my story initially, because I sort of got a bit more famous and quote unquote famous on Twitter. I went from having 5 followers to like over 1,000 followers on Twitter because I was sharing some of my trays and my transaction history and wallet history. And long story short, I turned 0.6 ETH into about 40 ETH, just in combined value of NFTs, ETH in my wallet and stable coins. And then the Moonbirds came along as well, and then obviously that hit 48th, but I didn't sell my Moonbird, so it's unrealized gain. But people kind of started asking me a lot of things because they're like, what you've done is incredible, like how did you do this? And at the time, I actually didn't think that what I'd done was that insane because, you know, we're in these alpha groups together where we're amongst some very smart people and some very smart traders. And I'd always just compared my wallets to their wallets and, like, you know, they're making hundreds and hundreds of ETH in a matter of months. So I always just thought I was just a small fish, and I still am. But I realized that a lot of people wanted advice around, well, what is my trading methodology? Like, what is my philosophy around investing in projects and around, like what you said, recognizing whether a project is a legitimate good project to hold or one that you should just sell and get out of it as quick as possible because it's going to zero. And the more that people ask me, the more I realize, well, the only reason I'm in this situation is because of the people I learnt off, the people in the space that took the time to help me, to share their wisdom. And yeah, it was that network that allowed me to do that. And I realized that not everybody has access and has the ability to network like I did. Like, I was full-time in NFTs. Like, I could spend all day every day, like, DMing people, creating relationships, like, adding value to people's lives so that people can trust me more. Like, it took a long time. And not everybody has the ability to do that and the time to do that. And so a lot of the time, you know, people just simply can't get access to the same groups that we're in, whether they're free groups or whether they're paid groups. So I came up with the idea of, like, okay, well, I got to this point of being a competent NFT trader, I guess, investor and flipper, by learning from all of these people. What if I could create an event, an NFT project, make it free, but I essentially bring in all the people that have helped me and then more people to essentially come in and share their exact things that helped me become a better trader. So share their stories, their journeys, their mistakes, their best trading skills and strategies, and essentially teach people what they would do if they were starting from scratch again, around how to become a better investor in this space. And that's where I came up with the idea of the NFT Expert Summit, because the summit model in Web 2 is a really common model, but I haven't seen it done in Web 3 yet. And I thought, this is great. This is something a bit different. Yeah, I can make it 100% free. That way, you know, it won't be gated by an extremely expensive mint price or anything, and it'll be open to the people that probably need this more, or the people that are just starting out and only have, like, a small bank balance or a bankroll to work with. And 25 experts, and yeah, we're minting this month. We haven't got an exact mint date yet, but this is coming out at the start of June. So we'll be minting, yeah, pretty early on in June. And then for the whole month of June, we'll be having expert speakers coming into the Discord and sharing one-on-one, I guess, AMA sessions around, yeah, how they approach investing and investing in projects. And, like, Airport, you're one of those experts, which I'm completely excited for. But, you know, like, you rose to fame on Twitter with your sensible and nuanced approach to looking into projects and chart analysis, and that's certainly, I've learned a lot from you, you know, and actually made some money off some of your calls. And so, you know, having someone like you come in and do the same for these other people, I think is a really cool bit of utility. And so, yeah, when you say it's an event, like, that's the reason why it's an event. It's like, I look at it like a month-long event, and people come in and there's no roadmap after the event. It's just come in, get knowledge, get lessons and learnings and strategies that once you learn, you've got forever, and you can take away and you can apply for the rest of your life, for the rest of your NFT career. And for me, I think that's really unique and cool utility, especially from a free mint. I don't think anyone's kind of done this before.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And I think it's, I do have a question, I guess, on just how you intend to, you know, mint, distribute, because I do think it's a very, you know, good thing that could help a lot of new people. But obviously, you know, with a lot of people that, you know, like to bot free mints and sort of, you know, snag these things up and stuff, yeah, I'm sure it's crossed your mind that if you just put it out there in the wild, that, like, the people that will end up getting it are people that really don't need it, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
So I'm curious how you're going to be distributing.
Yeah, so it's pretty low supply. Again, we haven't finalized the supply yet, but it'll be around 1,000 total, and mm-hmm, it'll be whitelist only. So you can only mint if you've been whitelisted. Another thing that was important for me was, like, to create the project without a public Discord or a public Twitter, and just none of that kind of crazy grinding and crazy just mass chaos that comes everywhere. I think I mentioned earlier that it's really important for me to educate and help people in this space. And so the way I'm giving out whitelists is I'm putting out educative content on my YouTube video around trading strategies. And then at the end of every video, I just give away a bunch of whitelists. And so people can watch the videos, learn something, get whitelist, or they can watch the video, not get whitelist, but still walk away in a net positive situation. So instead of making people grind, I'm sort of forcing people to grow their education in a way. But and people seem to be really enjoying that, because they're like, well, it is still kind of a grind for whitelist, but it's a grind that actually benefits me, as opposed to just mindlessly typing to strangers in the general chat of a Discord. But to answer your question, whitelist only, and we've got a private, closed, locked Discord, so no one can get in there unless they are whitelisted. And I am trying to remind everybody in that Discord that we will never stealth drop, we will never create some kind of random airdrop or anything like that, because the free mints, it can be dangerous for a lot of newbies, and so I want to be very particular about that. That's on mint day, it's going to be a very purposeful process, and I'll be there to guide everybody, to especially if the people have never there's a few people that have never minted an NFT in my group, which is really cool. That's going to be amazing. Their first NFT to mint. So very stoked to see that, even though the whole process is randomized, that there are people that are in the group that have got whitelist for that.
I love that a lot. I mean, I resonate very much with your message, because truthfully, I mean, and you know, you said some very nice things about me and stuff, but you know, I think I've always tried to be an open book and sort of share, you know, just the things that I'm learning as well, because it's sort of one of those things where I'm always hesitant to, I mean, okay, there's a couple things here. One, I'm always kind of hesitant to, you know, define myself into a niche. I think a lot of people considered me for a while to be a trader, and you know, like an analyst and stuff. And I always call myself a community analyst at best, because I do think that it is one of those things where, you know, it is the strength of the community, it is the strength of other people that bring different things to the table that, you know, adds value, right? And so for me, it really just is from the fact that, you know, I used to be a corporate lawyer, and sort of, you know, looking at companies and identifying risk factors and stuff like that was something that I kind of did. So for me, it was just like, okay, well, why don't we apply the same lens to look at all this stuff?
That's brilliant.
But I'm very, it helps, you know, it's good. And I think it helped really me identify certain projects that, you know, I bought into that I'm really happy with. And obviously, like, you know, Origins, it runs like a company in the back, and sort of, you know, now that I'm a bit more involved in sort of, you know, some of the processes there, like I love seeing that. You know, it helped me identify Azuki as a good investment, like really early on, which I think was great. And I think the funny thing though is that I really just am very wary of ever wanting to think that I'm a good trader, if you will. And to be honest, I don't even really think of myself as a trader anymore, because I kind of went away from that, and I don't really send that many transactions. And these days I, you know, really just like doing the content, and I really like, you know, talking to people and just, you know, engaging and doing what I can on that front. But truthfully, it's one of those things where I guess my end game was never really to flip JPEGs. You know what I mean? It was a really fun experience, but I still obviously love, you know, degenning every now and then, or like if I find a project I really like, you know, kind of buying into it and stuff. But it's just it's interesting because the perspective just seems to change over time. And I'm curious sort of where you see yourself positioned over time as well. Like obviously with your, you know, education and things, like, you know, it's no small feat going from 0.6 to 40. But is that what you want to keep doing in this space too? Like keep, you know, trading and stuff?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think coming into NFTs, I came from a building background, right? And that word is so cliche, like builder. but the reality is I've run my own business and multiple business and failed at multiple businesses, you know, for the last 10 years. Like that's just what I've always done. Like I love just trying to innovate and trying to come up with new stuff. And so I was very surprised that when I came into NFTs, it took me 7-8 months to launch a project, because that's not who I am as a person. Usually I'm just like, launch, let's do something. Like I love just building and just trying things. But I found the game of investing and flipping JPEGs so enjoyable and so challenging and so profitable, I guess, that I just didn't need to, I think. And I also, you know what it was like, you know, for the longest time, the amount of quality projects were just few and far between. And so to me, I couldn't really see how, like, all I could see was like these 10K PFP collections just launching again and again and again and again. And I knew I just didn't want to do that because they were shocking. Like, it's just, I did not want to contribute to that in any way, shape or form. You know, so, but you could argue, I guess I was contributing to it by actually minting it and flipping it. And then, yeah, I can see the arguments for, you know, the hate that the flippers get sometimes in our ecosystem. But the reality is, without the flipping and the profitability from flipping, we wouldn't be where we are today with regards to how many people have been attracted to the space. I think you alluded to this earlier. Like, it is the money that attracts a lot of people to the space and will continue to attract for people to the space. And I think that's a good thing. It's going to be a lot of short-term pain for that reason, but that's going to create more and more people to come to the space. And hopefully when that happens, there's enough smart, intelligent people that are going to push the boundaries, that come in for the money, realize there's a lot more than that, and then come in and start innovating and start creating, you know, whatever that might be. That might be being a project founder or being a content creator, like we just talked about. And so with regards to my future, I have no idea, but I know what's worked well for me so far, which is connect with like-minded people, try to add value to their lives in some way, just try and be a good person, try and help people, because it just comes back. And I think I just did a couple of videos on my YouTube, which is I go through one of my wallets and I go through all the sales history of that wallet, and you can see all my bad trades and all my good trades. And like the ratio of like profits from degen mints and like stealth mints to just the regular old whitelist mints is about 50-50. And so a lot of questions I get is like, one, how do I learn how to degen mint like you did and degen trade? And my answer is like, we'll come to the NFT Expert Summit, because I'm getting like degen minting specialists come in. Like, there was a dude that is coming to speak. He minted up 100 of the We're All Gonna Die that launched last week.
Oh my God.
And so for people who aren't aware, like, that floor hit 1.5 ETH yesterday. He was still holding most of them. So yeah, within a matter of 7 days, he's made like over 150 ETH. So that's from insane. A degen mint, from a free mint. It's pretty crazy. But the second question is like, well, how did you get all these whitelists? And, you know, the whitelist I got by essentially networking and essentially just like what we're talking about, trying to add value to other people's lives, trying to be a good person, try to give without expecting anything in return. And over time, I was just slowly rewarded with more opportunities, got put into positions like yourself where you were more involved with certain projects and certain communities. And then what comes with that is more access to certain whitelists. And yeah, it was really beneficial essentially to me for me to come in and literally just try and give without any expectation of return. And I've been rewarded for it, you know, in the short term. And that's very much what I'm going to continue doing. So whether that means I'll continue flipping, I'm not sure. To be honest, I really love like art block stuff, and it's always been out of my price range. And I have a bit of a skewed view on NFTs. I think like I don't like allocating a big percentage of my bankroll to a singular project. And so, you know, I've obviously done very well, but you know, to contribute like 5 to 10 ETH to a single NFT piece when my bankroll is only like 70 ETH is just too risk on for me. A lot of people don't think like that. But I would love to get to the point where, yeah, I feel like I can splurge a little bit on some really great art blocks pieces that I like and get into that kind of trading and investing long-term. But in order to do that, I need to really continue to grow my bank balance. I need to try and get my bankroll to that 200 to 300 ETH marker.
You know, it's funny. All the things you're saying, actually, a lot of them really, really resonate with me and have sort of been thoughts that have crossed my mind, too. I mean, you know, one in particular is, you know, the idea of coming in as a trader and being attracted by, you know, all the stories you hear about the money people are making and just like, you know, what the hell is going on here, right? Like, there's something here. And I think you're right. It is an interesting thing where it is good. I mean, it creates this thing of people will definitely pay attention to it and sort of be like, you know, what's going on here, right? But when you actually get into the space, a lot of times you see people that are traders and they're, you know, flipping JPEGs and, you know, with very success, of course. But over time, people seem to have this pattern of looking for opportunities and looking for ways to do something to actually add value to the ecosystem, you know? And I think for me, it took me a long time to figure out what it is that I wanted to do. Cause I'm the same as you. I find it really difficult to just be a passive participant in anything I'm doing. I feel like I need to just like, you know, get out there guns blazing and like, all right, I gotta make something, you know, like I want to do something here. And I think a lot of people share that. I think a lot of people, you know, want to find a project where they can, you know, be involved with it or sort of, you know, even just community stuff like modding for a project. You know, I think people get really excited about that kind of stuff. So it is this thing where I believe that, you know, if we get more people into the space and then people find ways that they can add value and sort of contribute to the space, you know, it's a really, really good proposition. And I think that's what, in my mind, will help sophisticate the space. Because currently, I think, you know, the talent pool is obviously quite limited. And I think, you know, just in terms of perspectives, I think we don't have a varied enough perspective for a lot of things, and we don't have enough of an offering, you know, of various things as well. Like, I mean, even just another example of this, like with the content, right? Like the podcast for me was always going to be, you know, I'm not going to sell shit to anybody. It's just going to be a zero cost consumer thing, because it felt like everything in this space for a while was gated behind an NFT, you know, and there's like good reason for this. And there's, you know, also really just shit applications of this too, right? Like, I mean, I think 100%. What you're doing makes total sense. You know, you're holding an event. And so it's like, here, I'm selling, you know, not even selling, but I'm handing out tickets for this event. And these tickets may have utility down the line. I don't know, but it's free, right? And that's great because it limits your audience to that 1,000 people that hold a ticket, right? But for me, I was like, you know, I'm making this content. There's no reason for this to be behind a paywall. You know, there's no reason for people to have to buy an NFT or even mint an NFT to, you know, to be a part of this, right? And I think the model that we have in Web 2 of having, you know, partnerships basically and collaborations with brands that want to sort of that I believe in as well, right? And you know, that sort of made a lot of sense to me. And thankfully, you know, Origin sponsors the podcast, and I think it's, you know, it's a really great situation because then people can listen for free without needing to buy anything, you know. And at the same time, like, I get to talk about a project that I love and that I understand really well and sort of know, you know, the team behind and stuff. So it's sort of the win-win kind of situation, but there's just so little of that in this space, it feels like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. And when I sat down to nut out the NFT Expert Summit, I was trying to think about mint price and supply. I think it's most project founders kind of start with that when they come up with a project idea. And when I kind of added up the amount it would cost me to, you know, hire a dev team and hire a marketing team and video content team and everything that I'm doing as part of this launch, and then a mod team and then VAs to help with all the logistics of all the speakers, and I was like, okay, I think I could do this for, you know, maybe like below $20,000 in fiat currency. Mm-hmm. Like, and so when I figured that out and I thought, okay, if I raised hundreds of thousands of dollars from a mint, would it make the event exponentially better than if I didn't do that? And the answer was basically no. Like, I couldn't find a way to justify extracting that kind of money from the ecosystem. And so for me, it was like, well, this is a no-brainer. Like, it doesn't need to be a paid mint. I hope that more project founders kind of go into their launches with that kind of thinking. And don't get me wrong, I agree with you that I love the thinking about, like, does this need to be an NFT? Does it need to be a paid mint? But then I also love that founders are raising capital, you know, for... Mm-hmm. Recently, we saw Project PXN and Moonbirds both saying, we have a big idea and we think Discord is broken and we want to create a social app for NFTs and Web3. And in order to do that, we need huge development teams. We need months and months of work. We need, like, building something like this is not an easy feat. And so it makes sense that they need hundreds of thousands of dollars to make that happen. And so for them to charge, I think they both charge over two ETH for their mints, respectively. I can't remember exactly what the PXN
I think,
was.
But. Yeah, PXN, I think, was two. It started at two, the Dutch auction, yeah.
Yeah, and so I'm all for that. Like, I just think that's freaking awesome. And I'm an investor in Moonbirds, but not in PXN. But I love the fact that my money has gone to these builders and they're building something that I want to be a part of. Like, I want to get out of Discord. I hate Discord. Like, I think it's just madness in there. And if they can provide a solution that makes the whole experience, like what we were talking about early on, like for a newbie to come into Discord, wow, it is so full on. If you're not familiar with it. And so, yeah, I'm very bullish on founders raising capital. That's just the moral of the story, because if they need it, they're going to build great things for the space. So go for it. But it's not always needed.
It's interesting because I understand what you're saying. I think I largely agree in principle, but subject to a very big caveat, which is that I think that there are a lot of project founders that don't have the relevant experience or credentials yet. Absolutely. You know, advertise purely on hype and sort of, you know, create FOMO and stuff. And so they end up raising capital, which is not properly deployed because they don't have the experience in terms of how to actually spend money. And I think, you know, oftentimes they're not really thinking about it in terms of, well, how much do I actually need to raise to do what it is I'm trying to do, you know? And that to me is the most crazy thing, where you see these mints come up, and just because they're hyped, you know, they can have lofty goals or thoughts on what they want to do, but in my mind it's like worse than Kickstarter, you know what I mean? And absolutely. I don't know if you ever bought it, like buying stuff on Kickstarter is like you kind of expect it to come, you know, 6 months late if at all,
if it ever even comes. That's right, you just kind of, it's hope. But yeah, again, like that's why I think I was bullish on Moonbirds, because I was like, all right, here's a guy in Kevin Rose that has built something in the past. You know, Dig was extremely successful for a couple of years, but then in the scheme of things, wasn't successful. But then he's partnered with Alexis from Reddit. Before NFTs, I was just an absolute Reddit maxi. I would spend all my time on that platform. And so there's two guys that know how to use capital to build a social media company. And so, like what you said, if I was going to put my money anywhere to anyone to try and build a Discord competitor, then they're the guys I pick. I can't think of anyone I would bet on. You know, that have a better chance of achieving this. So,
I think that's absolutely right. I think that's one of the things where, you know, it is confidence building in a sense when you see, you know, more experienced teams coming in and people treating it, you know, seriously and sort of actually running it like a company, if you will. You know, because if you're raising startup capital and you're not incorporated or you're not governing yourself like an actual startup would, then there's just so many risks and red flags for investors, right? And I feel like that's the problem, is that, you know, for maybe you or me, like, or other people that have been in the space for a while that, you know, have like comfortable bankrolls and stuff, I think if you invest a couple of ETH into something and it ends up tanking for whatever reason, it's not the end of the world. It's not great, but it's not the end of the world, right? Because we've all seen, like, you know, really big wins, and we've been able to build our bankrolls and stuff. So in the grand scheme of things, it's a blip in the road, right? But I think the sad part for me is there are people that come into the space that don't really, you know, fully understand what's going on. And, you know, it all comes back to the new user experience, right? Where because they're not able to discern maybe, you know, the quality teams from the not so quality teams, they buy into the hype, they end up minting at the top, and then, you know, seeing their value diminish in a massive way. And, you know, I'm connected with somebody on Twitter who I wrote a thread about, you know, sort of Pixelmon and what I think happened with that one, right? And I think that was just way overhyped, and I think people, you know, just Cyber didn't have the credentials to make a video game, you know, that's all it was.
Yeah, correct.
Honestly, fraudulent marketing to some degree as well, to a severe degree, I think. And I think, it, you know, obviously interesting legal questions there, maybe potentially, I don't know, sort of, I don't want to get into that, but it's one of those things where this guy commented and said, you know, this helped me make sense of what happened, because he was kind of new in the space and I think minted at the top of the Dutch auction at 3 ETH and saw it immediately plummet. So that kind of experience is where I think there are massive risks with the current model and people raising capital, because, you know, honestly, if we're going to be completely transparent about what we think, like, there are just some people and so many projects in the space that I think have no business asking people for money, you know?
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah, I think it's a huge problem. And yeah, I don't know what it's going to take to fix it. Because we see a lot of people complaining about it. But yeah, there's if there's money to be made, you know, people are still going to keep speculating. So I don't know what the solution is. Maybe it's we need more builders coming in. Maybe we need more proof of Freemint's winning, that it just becomes so obvious to 90% of traders that you should just stay away from paid mints for the majority, unless it is something that's, you know, backed by a legitimate team, because why would you even touch that when all the Freemints do so well with regards to a return on investment?
I think that's right. And I think overall, just, you know, again, it comes back to the idea that the talent pool just isn't that big in the space yet. You know, I think if we get better and more sophisticated teams that come in that want to build cool things, then I think that's great. You know, I think it's as you said, it's a great proposition. I think, you know, people, obviously, if they understand the risks of getting in and stuff, like, that makes total sense. And I think with respect to free mints, you know, same thing. I think it's obviously wonderful when there are, you know, when there's the opportunity to get in when it's free. I think the only other caveat is obviously for something that may have a lot of trading volume, you know, if people end up buying the top on secondary or something, you know, thinking they're getting something else, that's also a tricky situation. I don't think this really applies to your project so much, because again, I think it's tickets for an event that people will presumably want to go to. And so, you know, as much as there will be some secondary volume, like I it's not the same as like free mint of a, you know, 10K PFP.
Yeah, that's right. Where people are essentially buying it because they want it to go up, not because
exactly
they want to be actually part of the project.
Exactly. And then I think, you know, you get the situation where a lot of people will end up being exit liquidity and sort of, you know, buying the top and sort of, you know, you can have the same experience of buying something that's basically vaporware at the top because you just don't have the experience and don't have the know-how in terms of like how to, you know, look at the markets and understand. So in that sense, you know, the free mint model is, it's great that it's mint, but a free mint, sorry, but, you know, after some time, once the secondary volume really starts to rip, it's neither here nor there. You know what I mean? Because the price is just so high. And that to me is, you know, the counter argument, I guess, is obviously that if it justifies a higher price, then they've done something to, you know, arguably justify that in the eyes of people on the secondary market. But, you know, it is hard. And I think especially with the stuff right now, it's a clear example of, you know, what the hell is going on, right? I mean, with the we're all going to die, like that's, it's a very narrative driven thing. But we don't know what the end game is. So it's highly speculative as to, you know, where it's going to go after this. And the only thing we have to go off of is that, you know, people have enjoyed narrative. And so far, the storytelling has been good. And that's kind of the same with Goblin Town. And it's like,
what is the co-founder of Aetherox as well, which was another free mint. And one of the first real, like, free mints, like, Aetherox guys, like, that was an incredibly inspiring story for me as a newbie to the space, because this was months and months ago. Free mints were not a thing, right, back then. And these guys, and they had 0% royalties for the longest time. Like, they...
Seriously?
They built out this game, this play-to-earn game, which is arguably still one of the best NFT play-to-earn games there is. And it was this bunch of devs that came out and built this free mint, and they had this token that you could earn Zug from, like, playing this game, and the community just loved it. And the community was demanding the devs to change the royalty percentage on OpenSea, because they're like, you guys have built something so cool. You're working night and day making this game enjoyable for us. But they just did it because they loved strategy games, and they loved building something like this. And so I think I can see why having a co-founder from that Aetherox team on the We're All Gonna Die team, I can see why the speculation is so high, because they've proven that they're good people, right? So it's like, unless he's completely backflipped and now he's not a good person anymore, and this is just like, he's just decided, well, I didn't make any money from Aetherox, and now this is my time to cash in.
You never rule it out, right?
Yeah, that's right.
No, that's a good insight. I actually didn't know about that at all. You know, there's one of the guys that I follow. He posted this thing a while back on free mints. I think it's actually one of the co-founders of Hideout, which you're in. Wicked, was it?
Yeah.
I mean, he posted something about... Right. So he posted something about free mints. And I remember it was, you know, that list sort of got me thinking about just how, you know, these teams can go about doing this. And it is an interesting proposition where if you, you know, just let something out into the wild for free and then obviously slap a royalty on it, then there's limited downside for people, at least initially. And I think this is kind of what happened with the treasury ecosystem where, you know, like with the small brains and all that stuff, like a lot of the initial mints were free. And so it was a lot of equity built up, I think, with the community of people who basically were able to sort of, you know, hold without really fear of losing, you know, their investment or whatever, and sort of saw a lot of price appreciation. I think that built up a very strong community for a good portion of the time, you know, even where there was a bit of FUD and a bit of doubt as to, you know, the direction of the ecosystem as a whole. But overall, you know, again, I think a lot of equity with that community for being like, wait, we got this stuff for free, you know, and it's a really great sort of feeling. I think it's just an interesting one, again, on at what point does that narrative kind of shift, you know, notwithstanding the fact that it was minted for free, it's now something that's worth like a lot of money. You know, I think this happened with like NFT worlds, like people bought the top of that. And so the fact that it's free mint, it's kind of neither here nor there at this point. You know what I mean? Like it's a good faith move. But it doesn't really matter so much now. Small brains, I think same thing. You know, the fact that some people bought the top, and I think at the top it was maybe like 6.5 ETH or something in Magic. And I think, you know,
but if they're buying the top, this is the thing. It's like, if they're buying the top, why are they buying the top? Are they buying the top because they are speculating the price will keep going, or they really want to be in the community that badly? And if the answer is the latter, do they have a right to be disappointed if the price drops 90% in value?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Do you know, truthfully, I think it's a combination of the two things.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't think it's black and white for sure.
No, I think I would certainly say that if you hold from the beginning of a project and sort of, you know, really have that emotional investment to it, then I think the price, at least in my completely anecdotal and unscientific opinion, you know, like it doesn't really, you know, seem to be so much correlated to just price. And I mean, this happened with me and Azuki, obviously, because, you know, I held that since pre-reveal. And so for me, it's not really so much about price. Like, I think some people, you know, look at the floor price all the time and are sort of like concerned about like, oh, you know, like when are we going to get a pump and this and that. And you'll get that with any project, I think. But for me, I'm kind of price agnostic because it's more about like, you know, I'm holding this for X amount of time and it's sort of become my Web3 identity in a way, you know, and I think that's what gets me kind of feeling that way. I do think it's possible for people to buy in later on and have that experience too, but I would say it's certainly quite a jarring experience, you know, if you buy at the top and then it plummets quite hard and then you're kind of stuck feeling like, man, you know, what did I just buy into? And maybe if the community sentiment then starts to get a bit more negative, it's kind of like, man, it's not even that great of an experience. Like you kind of just made it in time for the FUD kind of thing, you know? And that's always kind of tricky, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you said, it is a combination of all of the above. I don't know how much, I guess Azuki's not the best example because the price drop was directly caused by a blog post from the founder. But I think in the small universe example, like that wasn't caused by the founders. Oh, actually, maybe there was that issue, but then they jumped to and solved that issue in a really amazing way and proved that they're a really competent team. So I don't know. It's a lot of the time it's not because of the founder's fault that the price just fluctuates so much. So yeah, I agree that it can be really jarring for someone that can buy the top and see that go down. But like you said, if like you've bought the top because you want to be in the community and you want that PFP to be your digital identity, then yeah, maybe you don't care that the price has fluctuated that much. Maybe that's like you treat it like, you know, you've bought a particular type of car that, you know, you've bought a Tesla because you want to be in that cult and that community. And you don't really mind that you've bought the Tesla when it first came out for 150 grand or 250 grand, and now you can get them for 30 grand. Don't know. I'm not really sure. I've never been in that situation myself personally. So, but yeah, I can see both sides of the story where people can be pissed off and where people are buying for the right reasons and then, don't necessarily care.
I agree with that. I think, it all comes back at the end of the day to the idea that maybe we shouldn't be, you know, investing things that we can't afford to lose, right? And I think that's one of those things that is also a really important message that I think a lot of people don't heed. Like I know people who, you know, commit way too much of their bankroll to, you know, a specific project. And I'm guilty of this myself. Like, I mean, obviously in the Azuki ecosystem, like I have a lot of exposure. And I think, you know, the vast sort of like by a wide margin, my largest exposure project is Azuki. And I think that's, you know, I'm very happy with that actually in terms of like my situation. I think there are only a couple of projects that I'd want to hold really because I think they have upside potential. I think, you know, Azuki is definitely one of them. And I think obviously like, you know, Moonbirds as well, like for the reasons you've talked about, like great project. I'm not exposed, but you know, I'm sort of paying attention to what's being done.
Well, I didn't want it to be that higher percentage of my exposure, you know, yeah. I didn't have a choice. Like just like when it hit 48th, I'm like, all right, I just spent 6 months trying to get to 48th and I worked my ass off to get it. And this stupid raffle got me the same amount in the space of 48 hours. Like that's just NFTs, man. It's wild, right? Like
No, it's true. You know, the funny thing is I totally missed the raffle. Like I didn't submit a wallet. I totally forgot because I was plugging away at the Discord server for the podcast and I was like getting ready to launch the podcast and everything. And then I hopped into Origins and I saw everyone was talking like, oh, I didn't get it. I'm like, what are y'all talking about? Like, yo, it's the Moonbirds raffle. I was like, fuck. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. So, but I was really happy with that actually because I felt like the way they did it. I mean, I know people that put in like I think 10 to 15 submissions, if not more, you know, for the raffle, and that's really just again, I think the situation of, you know, you basically get it if you have 2.5 ETH, you know, that you can spread across several wallets. But, you know, I do know some people that only submitted their one wallet where they only had 2.5 ETH. And, you know, for them getting that grail PFP in a sense and getting one, that, you know, sort of is a really high quality community in a sense. Like, I think
being able to sell it for like life changing money, right?
Yep, for sure. And, you know, I think it does change something though. And I think there is this thing about, you know, there's a certain level of, I guess, security in finding your space, if you will, when you get a PFP that really you think symbolizes something for you and sort of means something, you know, because for me, I remember I used to change my PFP a lot and I just bought, you know, random PFP projects and stuff. And then I got my Azuki and I was kind of like, yeah, this is just like my thing now. This is kind of like who I am. And it's a weird identity. You found your home. Exactly. You know, I sort of feel like it must be, I'm curious how you feel about it too, but like with your Moonbird, like, you know, it feels actually, you have a very clean one, I have to say. And I feel like it's very iconic. It's like very you now, you know?
Yeah, well, thank you. I feel the same about your Azuki. You know, like the white hair and just, yeah, it's very, very you. It's just immediately stands out as Airport's Azuki. And I love the alliteration as well. But, oh man, when I was actually disappointed on reveal because it was kind of so basic and I saw so many of these cool ones, like cool hats. And like, I really love snowboard glasses. Moonbirds, like, cool. Yeah. They are so cool. So I was really disappointed because I think it's like ranked 9,000 or something and it's just not really that great. But yeah, it has. It's kind of just grown into my brand, I guess, which is, yeah really interesting. And yeah, I don't know how I feel about it. And I've thought about like, well, what happens if I sell it? Like what happens to my brand? But I am I'm doxed publicly. Like my face is all over my YouTube. Like I don't think I have that same issue as an undoxed or more anonymous founder or content creator like yourself. So yeah, I'm curious to see what you think around your Azuki. Like what, if you did end up selling your Azuki, or maybe you changed your Azuki. Maybe you found one on the floor that was just, your grail Azuki. And even though you do love your potential one, like it's just one that you couldn't help but fall in love with. Like, yeah, how easy would it be for you to change?
I think there are different types of people when it comes to this kind of thing. For me, I woke up at like, I think it was like 3 or 4 a.m. For the reveal because, you know, I was living out of Hong Kong and stuff. So when I woke up and saw it, it instantly just became like my avatar, you know. And for me, mentally, there's no Azuki in the whole collection that I feel like would be me in that same way.
Yeah.
And so truthfully, like the one that I have that I use as my PFP, I've actually written it off in my mind and I don't even consider it as part of my portfolio, you know, because for that one, I consider it actually just my unironic avatar and my PFP such that, you know, I'm not actually looking to trade it. Like, I don't think I would sell it unless there was, you know, a massive desire that, you know, or need for capital, really, if there was some kind of an emergency or something, like, you know, God forbid. But really, I kind of see it as just not even an asset anymore, you know, it's just me. And I think that's a different approach than a lot of people may take with this. And I think, you know, definitely not the best financial decision per se, but I do sort of see it that way. And, you know, I have a second Azuki that I will sell at some point, I'm sure. you know, when the price is right or when the circumstance is right kind of thing, and obviously hold a lot of beans and stuff. But yeah, I mean, there's no Azuki in the whole collection that actually speaks to me more than the one that's just mine. And I think that's the whole idea of identity and branding and stuff. And, you know, some people see it differently. I know people that swing trade or sort of, you know, pick up one off the floor because they feel like it resonates with them more and stuff. And I'm kind of just like, yeah, that's just not it. You know, like this is mine. And yeah. You know, I can't imagine not using it.
That's the magic of NFTs, I think, is that we cannot help but have these emotional attachments to them. And I think that's what creates so much more magic around the space. Because
it's
going to have so many more applications when online digital identities become more and more needed. You know, at the moment it's quite limited with these like tiny little PFPs on our social media platforms. But yeah, like I'm excited to see kind of the future and what applications they have, because I think that those emotional attachments are only going to grow, right?
Yeah. No, I fully agree. And I think that's sort of, you know, it's the emotional side of it that awakens something in a lot of us, I think, that maybe we didn't know was there before. You know, for me, I think it's definitely pulled out a more creative side of me, you know, where now I'm actually getting more towards, you know, kind of what you were saying about art blocks and stuff. Like, I kind of feel more now that I'm spending more time on Foundation and like talking to artists and stuff and you know, really getting commissions and things, but also buying, you know, one-of-one artwork from small creators. And I think, you know, it's just kind of the emotional side of NFTs has made me realize that there's a lot more to art than just, you know, looking at a picture. And that's really cool. And, you know, one of the guys that I'm, you know, quite close with in the space, Broke0x, he was on the podcast and he was talking about how, you know, owning an Azuki kind of made him do things that he didn't really think about, you know, before at all. And so, you know, more of a creative side to him as well, where he, you know, was working on an animated short film using his Azuki. And that was just completely out of left field for him. So there's something really beautiful here that I really like. And I think, you know, that's kind of why for me personally, I kind of moved away from the trading stuff a little bit and really doubled down on the stuff that I thought was really cool and that I was, you know, enjoying more than just sort of watching my ETH balance go up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I do feel like, you know, there's a lot here, and I'm similarly super excited to sort of see, you know, where the space goes and what we continue to innovate on you know, to sort of see if we can find really the best application of the technology and the best use case such that, you know, it actually does more good than harm, because I feel like right now it's there's a lot of unfortunate stuff that happens in the space. So
100%.
Yeah, man, that was like the fastest hour of all time, by the way. It's really nice speaking to you, and we'll have to get you on again.
I could speak for another hour with you, I think, on this stuff. So if you have me, love to come back on.
Oh, for sure. Anytime. I mean, I think, you know, it really, the whole point of the podcast is, again, it's not really just about talking about, you know, a project or two. It's more about, I think, just hearing people's stories again, right? Because I think there is a lot to be, I think there's a lot of things that people can relate to almost just by hearing people talk about, you know, their own experience or thoughts they've had, and maybe give new perspectives and stuff. So I love doing this. And I think, you know, I'm sure our relationship will continue going forward as well. So, you know, looking forward to having you back.
Awesome. Thanks, Airport.
Before we go, why don't you tell people where they can find you? So your socials and your YouTube and everything.
Yeah, so all my socials are just LiamDNFT, LiamDNFT. So on Twitter, on YouTube. And yeah, you can find me with the Moonbird with a little light blue background, as Airport was saying. But yeah, I'm obviously launching my project. So my DMs are open. I try to get to as many people as possible on my Twitter and my Discord and my YouTube comments, but I'm just handing out whitelists, as I said, on YouTube and on Twitter. By the way, Airport, I don't know if I've done this with other podcasts. I'm happy to give away a couple of whitelists to your listeners.
Absolutely.
What we've done in the past is just, if listeners, you know, do a tweet saying, I just listened to at LiamD and at Airport on the podcast, just love the conversation, blah, 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 and just tag both of us. And then just we randomize and pick a couple of winners out of that. But we'd love to reward your listener base in some way, shape or form.
Super happy to do that. And, you know, feel free to run it however you like. And, you know, there is a newsletter that goes out with it as well. But obviously for anyone listening, yeah, like tag us both and you know, we can figure out how to sort that out too. And, you know, thanks for thinking about that. I think, again, I really like what you're doing. I like the way that you're approaching it. And I think, you know, it's rare to sort of hear about it's rare to find for me to find people that I think I'm so aligned with in terms of so many things and just the ethos and approach towards, you know, trying to educate people and stuff. So definitely really excited to see how this shapes up and really excited for you, man.
Thanks so much, dude. All right. You might hear my one-year-old screaming in the background. I think that's my sign. But yeah, awesome being here, man. And thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. All right. I'll see you later, Liam.